colonialism, all of these problems are propelling us down the road of catastrophe. And I'm afraid what's happening in Gaza right now, as we speak, is an illustration of that tragedy.
Yeah, I often think of the U.S. as the modern Rome, but some of that is because we have a Senate, and they put a lot of stock in their Senate. I think the Senate is the only institution in the government, or according to the Constitution, that can't be abolished, although it doesn't say so explicitly. That's what it amounts to.
Sometimes they get a pretty good impression of abolishing themselves.
Yeah.
Of their active role in furthering the business of the country.
What do they say? That's the place where the bills go to die.
Indeed.
That was University of Montana Professor Richard Drake speaking with KBOO contributor David Rosenberg. This has been KBOO News In-Depth. Thank you for being with us. I'm Althea Billings.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll look into the case of a goat, a girl, and the rise of more compassionate and humane alternatives to 4-H agricultural programs. We'll be speaking with Danielle Hanisch, Executive Director of LEAP, Leaders for Ethics, Animals, and the Planet. It's a program that offers students the farm animal care experience and opportunities of 4-H without the selling of those animals for slaughter, which can traumatize many kids.
These kids were, 14, 15, 16 years old and just realizing, like someone flipped a switch, that, oh my gosh, these animals are no different than my dogs and cats at home. And now I'm knee deep in this program and I don't think that there's another option and I have to betray my friend who I have cared for.
We've got your goat. On the next Voices for the Animals, Friday, November 24th at 10 a.m., right here on 90.7 KBOO FM.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays at 8 a.m. For 30 years, Celeste and I have been encouraging and engaging interviews and conversations about politics, social issues, and things which concerns you, your family, and your community. Join us on Mondays at 8 a.m. and be a part of this community radio experience.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl, Tasha T.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive. So, Terry, welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
Great. Oh, great. Terry, first of all, my name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns. I didn't ask for your pronoun.
He and him.
Oh, great. Okay, wonderful. Well, Terry, I know that you've written a new book, and I can't wait to learn more about your book. It's about transgender history. But first, I want to talk to you a little bit and let our listeners get to know you a little better. So, Terry, could you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Sure.
Who are you?
I am Terry. I am 60, going to be 62 years old. I am a trans man. I have known since I was 5 years old that I was different. I was out on the playground and I saw a girl out of all the girls on the playground and all the boys on the playground, and I instantly was in love. whatever that is at 5 years old. And it was 1966, and I could not tell a soul. And I thought I was lesbian for a long time. And then when I was 35 years old, I met the love of my life. We've been together for 27 years this year, and we're just living life and so excited about the book and so excited about, you know, everything that it goes along with being trans. I mean, transgender to me was a new term. I didn't even really hear it till I was 58 years old, believe it or not. I started thinking and hearing about it maybe at 55. And of course, my parents were still alive. I did not want to transition while they were alive because they were staunch Catholics. And oh boy, I was already an abomination to my dad at 33 when he found out or figured it out. And so I waited till they both passed and then finally understood I could get surgery. And I went through with that for top surgery. And been 3.5 years now on testosterone, had my surgery last year, and I couldn't be happier in my life right now.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What an amazing story.
Yeah, it's been a long haul, I'll tell you. You know, for what, 20 some odd years, I had to be quiet, and nobody could know. It was hard. It was really hard. And there were other things going on in my life too that were not so good. My father was very abusive when I was a child, and it never stopped. And then I was kind of under the, I guess, self-made impression that if somebody asked me if I was gay or lesbian or what, you know, whatever letter they wanted to use, that they already knew. So I just waited until my father approached me when I was 33 and he said, "Are you like living with this woman?" Like, and I said, "Yeah." And he said, "So you are," and he could never say the word. And I said, "Yep." And I instantly became an abomination. So that's my story.
What was the hardest thing about coming out? Was it coming out to your parents? I mean, as queer or as trans?
You never did.
So that was
So they never knew. But what, you know, and you know, I'm old, older. I like to say that queer was a really hard word for me for a long time because queer was a bad thing when I was growing up. You know, if you got called queer, it was bad. You were going to be killed or hurt or maimed or something. And so for now, you know, the kids today are using queer very, very loosely, which, of course, it scares me because I still have trauma from that, right? But at the same time, it's like, yes, we finally made it. You know, we turned the corner and we're different and the world is different. And, you know, so I'm excited about that as well. And so to answer your question, I didn't come out to them really until he asked me at 33. I was living with some other woman at the time and until I met the love of my life. So, yeah.
Terry, were you a religious person as an adult? Did you have to deal with that as an adult at all?
I've always been spiritual. I left the Catholic Church as soon as I can at 15 when my parents didn't like force me to go anymore. And I never went back. I say that the Catholic Church is a good place to be from. And I definitely dealt with the guilt and everything, but I was always very spiritual. And I believe in God, you know, I believe that he takes care of my life, and my life is his. But never religion. I don't believe in a religion. I think it's a bunch of, you know, as we all do, think they're a bunch of haters and can, you know, twist their words and throw them at us whenever they want. And, you know, but don't let them be honest about how judgmental they're being, you know. So that's how I look at religion.
And how has your partner been about your transition? Was your partner supportive?
At first, she said, let's take it a day at a time. So I was scared. I wasn't sure. But, you know, transitioning doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. I was on testosterone for maybe a year before I even started growing hair on my face. And so it was a very, very, very slow transition. And every day we lived it together, and she's great with it now. She loves it. She rubs my beard. She she has fun with it. So, and so do I, of course. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Did your partner always know that you were transgender?
I always told her I was a man trapped in a woman's body. But again, you know, that word transgender wasn't really in my vocabulary much. And I know it's been around since like the 70s, but it wasn't really, really around till the late 90s. So, you know, and I kind of had my head buried in the sand because of my parents. So,
yeah.
So we kind of didn't really discuss it until about, I think when I was 55, I started saying, you know, when my parents are gone, I'm going to do something about this. And I went to explore it and stuff like that. And so, yeah.
That's great. Yeah. It's just such a wonderful story to hear. And it sounds like you had a really fast learning curve because you wrote a book about transgender history. I mean, you know, when you were 55, you hadn't even really begun to really explore it fully yet, and now just a few years later you've written an entire book about it.
Yeah. it's something I think that's been brewing all my life, because, you know, one thing, I'm a very passionate person, and when I have an issue that I feel strongly about, I kind of want the whole world to know. You know, and this is a big issue for me. And as we'll talk about soon, is the reason for my book is a lot of kids today feel so alone. And, you know, I want to say to them, you're not alone. And I want to show them, you know, the book is Transgender Trailblazers. And I want to show them that there were people. I'm doing research on a guy in 1910, he came out in 1920 that he knew he was transgender, although that word was never part of his vocabulary. He just knew he was a man in a woman's body. So I want to say, you're not alone. We've done this. We've fought these things that you're fighting today, you know, good old Ronnie in Florida and other people. And we fought them. It's a little bit darker, it's a little bit harder, but they're the same. It's the same hate, and we can all get through this together. And so that's why I wrote the book.
Well, that's great. Well, let's move on to your book, and we'll continue also talking about your transition as we're talking about your book. But I definitely want to get a lot in about the book. So what is the title of your book?
It is Transgender Trailblazers. And then it's, I don't want to give too much away, but that's the name of it. And that's going to be the title. It's not going to be under my name. It's going to be under the name Gene Turner. And if you catch the reference there, Gene Turner, I picked that name because I'm turning genes. And so I thought, what better term than Gene Turner? So that's my author name, and I have a little fun with it, and yeah, and that's why I did it, is because kind of a spit in the face of maybe some people out there that hate me because of who I am. So.
Oh, great. Gene Turner. Well, that's yeah. that's a great name. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm from Portland, Oregon, and out here the name of our basketball team is the Portland Trail Blazers.
Right.
So right. It sounds like we should change the name of our basketball team to the Transgender Trail Blazers.
I love it.
I like that even better.
Let's do it. But, what do we need to do to make that happen?
Yeah. Well, okay. Great. Well, let's talk about your book, because I'm just, you know, really thrilled to hear any new writing about transgender history. What is your book about?
Okay, so it's about trailblazers, the people that have come before the kids of today. Okay, and so there's a lot of them, as you could imagine. There's many out today that were not out in the 80s, the 70s, the 60s. And so I'm kind of covering some different eras in time and showcasing the incredible, incredible stories that I'm discovering. It's like, you know, my spouse, my girlfriend, my wife, whatever, she said to me today, "You're like a treasure hunter." And I said, "I am a treasure hunter and I love it." And so I'm finding all these little tidbits about people. Like I said, the one guy I found, I've been working on for the last week, he was born in 1914 and he knew he was dressing as female, I mean, as male. The only one that knew he was female was his aunt that raised him and a couple of cousins, and that was it. And surprisingly, they never said anything to anybody about it. He had three wives. He made up a story that, and some people may know this story, that he had a bad accident in his younger years and had to wear a binding around his chest because he had broken ribs that never healed. And it also, so it damaged his ribs and it damaged his genitals. So he always supposedly wore a phallus, if you will, because his wives never knew. And he had his last wife, he was discovered on his deathbed. He had a heart attack and they called the EMT and his son was there. And the EMT ripped open his shirt to give him chest compressions. And he said to the son, "Your dad is your mom." And he said, "What?" And he said, "Your dad has boobs." And he said, "What?" And the wife was like, "What?" And so she wanted him cremated immediately because they didn't want any of the press or anybody, because he was a well-known guy. He played piano and saxophone in jazz bands. And she didn't want it to get out in the news that he was actually a woman. So she tried to have him cremated very quickly. But before she could have him cremated or during it, one of his sons, whom he adopted and whom he loved and all his life, turned around and sold the story to the media. So it all got out. And then, of course, the wife was just like, "I didn't know." And nobody believed her because it was like, how could you not know? You know, well, he made up this story. He never did have damage to his breast. He never did have genital damage. He just made that story up so he could pass as a man. I mean, isn't that some fun stuff to learn?
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm like, you know, when you said that he was on the floor and the EMT was doing medical care and he said to him, your dad is your mom. I just think there's like so many country music songs you could write with that one line.
My dad is my mom. Your mom.
Exactly.
I can hear it now.
That's great. Yeah. That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's one
so
of
this
them.
so this Now, how do we talk about people from the past who today we would call them, you know, transgender, we would call them transmasculine, we would call them men, maybe we'd say he. How do you refer to them, you know, from 1915? Like, did you call him he?
Yeah, he definitely went as he.
He definitely went as, okay, he did, yeah.
Yeah, he went as he his rest of his whole life.
Wow.
He performed as a man. Mm-hmm. He was married as a man. He never got officially married. He was just, you know, they lived as a married couple, but they never officially got the paperwork on three wives or three people. But yeah, he's like, you know, some of the verbiage going around at that time was cross-dresser, male impersonator, female impersonator, you know, all different kinds of different names. And transgender wasn't a word, you know, wasn't even thought of. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, when I refer to them and when others refer to them, now we call them transgender because we now know the word, right?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's, go ahead.
Do you think that, do you think that there's any chance that any of his wives suspected that he was transgender, or do you think that they really just didn't know?
You know, all the stories say that they said they didn't know, but somehow they had to, right? But I mean, the last wife, she said, well, you did things differently in that time. You didn't get dressed with the light, undressed with the light on, and the light was always off. I remember that with my parents. You hardly ever slept in the same bed. There was always two single beds in the parents' room. And if they slept together, you know, it blows the mind, doesn't it? It's like, how could they not know? So was he that good? Was he that good? Another question.
Yeah, he must have been good at a lot of things.
Yes. Wink, wink.
Exactly. Wow, yeah. That's amazing. And he was a musician?
He's a musician, yes. He played piano and saxophone.
Yeah.
He went on the road in several major cities around the United States. He was even asked to contract with Liberace. And he did not want to do that because he didn't want the spotlight on himself. So he lost out on a major career, right? Because he didn't want anybody to find out. And I can't blame him, you know, but that's the way it was back then, right? You had to hide. Now, Liberace never hid.
So right.
Do you know who Liberace is? Okay.
Right.
So, yeah, he never hid. So, you know. Yeah, so that's just one of the stories in the book, you know, and there's a lot more where that comes from. And I'm sure not the young kids of today, but the older people will probably know about the Bond girl story, right? Do you know the Bond girl story?
No, what's the Bond girl story? What's that about?
You know what a Bond girl is?
Is that like a product or something?
No, it's 007. He was a major spy character in
the movie.
Right? James Bond, right?
Right, right.
Well, he always had many women around him. Well, one of the women who did not play a star role, but was a Bond woman, was a transgender man, a transgender woman, I mean. So she was a trans woman. Yeah, and nobody knew it until somebody outed her after the movie came out.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
A lot of these stories end up, they're really famous, they're really, you know, whatever. They have a career ahead of them, and somebody outs them, and their career goes to the can.
Oh.
But they were still trailblazers because they were living their true selves. Nobody needed to know that. You know what I mean? Nobody needed to know they were trans or whatever. It's nobody's business, right? But I'm kind of glad that they did because I can write a book about it. So.
Wow, that's so interesting. So one of the themes that people had to deal with back then was being discovered. I guess that's what do you think? I guess you're saying that the Bond girl her career basically ended when she was outed.
Yep, she was a model. She was a Bond girl. She had a modeling career and an acting career and ahead of her, and she lost it all.
Wow. So yeah. People faced really big consequences for being outed back then.
Yes, as I did growing up in the 60s and 70s. I'm serious when I said if people knew you were queer, you could die. People were worse then than they are today. I read something interesting about before World War II ended, there were a lot of performers, female impersonators, male impersonators. That was a big thing. Straight men were going out to bars to see all these performers and enjoying it, you know, and it was a big thing, and it was taboo, but it wasn't, you know, something terrible until after World War II. I read what it said in quotes was, "The closet was born," and that's when the laws came, and the, you know, it's against the law to be gay, it's against the law to, you know, you can't marry, you can't do anything, you know what I mean? And it was really, really bad in the 60s and 70s. You didn't tell a soul. Even into the 80s and in the 90s, it started getting a little freer. There were gay bars, and there always have been, but they were always underground once, you know, after World War II. And so
that's,
you know,
so interesting. What do you think it was about history that changed after World War II that made society more repressive?
Great word. I think it, you know, it was the complaints. People started complaining more. The men came home from war, right? So there were no more like partying times and all of that stuff. Everything got real serious after the war. And the haters were born, you know, transgender, gay, lesbian. We've all been around for centuries and centuries till the beginning, from the beginning of time. But all of a sudden, after World War II, it was a big deal. It was like, no, 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 don't live that way. You know, the religious right started crying about it. And yeah, it blows your mind that you could think about it in the last century, this all happened. And so again, I say to the young of today, you know, don't feel alone. Don't be scared. We're here for you. We're all community, you know. We are all in this together, and we have a good standing now. We're not a few and far between. So that's my message. You know, I just hope it gets out there. I hope that kids of today can hear it and feel it and grasp onto it and ask for help. And, you know, just, you know, the suicide rate is huge, right? And I just don't want to lose any more kids. I don't want to lose any more people to this. You know, it's love. It's love.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. And why should we be killed for our love? Why should we kill ourselves over someone we love? No. No, no more.
So back in the day when these people were transitioning, like the Bond girl, jazz musician you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
were they able to do any kind of medical transition, or was their transition all just, was it just like makeup and, you know, bindings and different things?
Yeah, and there was a mix, right? The very first, believe it or not, the very first, if I'm remembering correct, is, I have to do some notes searching, but the very first gender transition surgically was done in the 1940s in America, you know, or in, you know, in this time frame. In Japan, it's been done for years, centuries. They had a whole different outlook on it, but for us, you know, and our people and our what do you call it, culture, the 1940s was the furthest back I could find so far that had surgery. The rest, you know, and that was few and far between. Somebody I was just doing some research on today, she was the second in British history to have surgery. Complete female, you know, male to female surgery, top, bottom, everything. And she, again, she lost her career. But, you know, and I'm only saying that because, you know, they, and except for the guy that died, of course, but these other people, they went on to live their lives. Like, the Bond girl didn't change. She just lived her life and lived her truth. And, you know, she was like, I'll be damned if I'm going to stop because of you. I may not be able to be hired for a job, but I'm not going to stop being me, you know. And the same thing with the male to female that I was working on today is she was the second Brit to have the surgery. That was in 1955, 1960. And she had a full surgery as well. But you know, there was many others first that haven't been reported that did have the surgery. And then secondly, just didn't have the surgery. They binded, they, you know, found hormones, they took hormones, they found undercover doctors that would give them hormones and, you know, backdoor alleys and things like that where they had to go to get what they did. But you know what the fun part about it is? They did it. You know, so be damned, you right wingers. You know what I mean? And I have strong opinions about that. I apologize if I'm crossing the line there.
No, not at all.
Okay.
So the second trans woman you were just talking about was somebody who had surgery in Britain in the 1950s. Can you tell me a little bit more about her?
Sure. She actually had, 1960 was her surgery. So she was living as a female impersonator in the 50s. She passed for
a drag queen?
A drag queen, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nowadays would be a drag queen, but back then it was female impersonator. And, you know, I've been writing so much about that, that that's what I call what I say. but there were drag queens and there were female impersonators back then. And there were cross dressers, female impersonators, drag queens. Sometimes they interchanged, sometimes they were different. There was a certain class to trans women than there were to drag queens or to cross dressers. You know what I mean? It's amazing. So this woman, this British woman, she lived to be 86. She just died in 2021. And she went on. So she lost her career because she was outed. And then she lived her truth. She tried to get other jobs and everything. And then they kept falling through once people found out about her. And then she just finally became a model and a restaurateur. And then she got a medal from King, he's king now, what's his name? George? No, I forgot his name.
Oh, Charles.
Charles. I just went blank. She got a medal from King Charles because of her work for transgender causes. She was in front of the bills in Britain for transgender issues, and she founded many of them, and she founded she co-founded many of them. And yeah, it's really interesting. She was just wow. She was amazing. She was beautiful. All these women, just simply beautiful. And I used to say many moons ago that a trans woman was more woman than I would ever be in my life. So just one of those things that, you know.
Yeah, when you're, I hope so, living, since you're, exactly. I mean, it sounds like you're a big hairy man now. So
No.
She's more of a woman.
Not that hairy, but I do have a beard and mustache and stuff. But something I love, you know, and that's my life. And just these women are so beautiful, and they live their truths, and they worked through all the hate that was thrown at them. All the, you know, you lost your job, you lost your housing, you lost your everything, and you started from scratch. And they did. And they scratched and they clawed and they climbed back, and they were, you know, they made it happen. She was married to a like a prince type person. I can't remember his exact title, but she was married to a prince type person until the world found out, and then a judge annulled their marriage because being gay married was not legal. And that's what he said: you're gay married, you're not, you're homosexually married, you're not straight, you know, you're not a man.
Oh my God, that's so wrong, like in at least three different ways.
Exactly. Oh, but could you imagine living through that? I mean, this is what they lived through on numerous occasions, right? So, wow.
Did her husband, the prince, know that she was transgender?
Yes, he did. And she had full surgery. She had full surgery. It wasn't like, you know, but he knew her as a female impersonator before that, before she had surgery. Then she had surgery, and then they got married.
Wow. So,
yeah, it's pretty fascinating, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, you could write a movie about that.
I hope it does one day, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, but a lot of these people are famous today now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So a judge annulled their marriage. It sounds like they didn't want to annul their marriage.
No. In one case, the marriage was annulled and they did have a hard time staying married. And then another case, they didn't want to get separated, but they ended up being separated. So, yeah.
Oh, so, my goodness.
It is wow. And, you know, I hope talking about time frames, you know, of, you know, in history, I know there's history buffs out there and they're going to love this, you know, and I just, you know, I just want it to touch as many people as possible because it's fascinating. It is treasure hunting. It is finding out you're not alone, you know, it was all of those things. So,
yeah, because nowadays, I mean, people can love who they want.
Absolutely.
And they can live with who they want, and they can even marry who they want. I mean,
it's
such a different world. And even though there's some, I mean, there's been some rollback of rights, it's still so far ahead of where it was even 10 years ago.
Yes, absolutely.
And let alone 50 years ago or 100 years ago.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow.
And
I don't,
you know, and you bring up a really good point, because these kids, you know, the younger ones of today, they may not know this stuff. You know what I mean? And because they feel alone, they need to hear this. You know, it's like, you're not alone. And I know I keep saying that, but I want to drive that home, because that's one of my biggest things about today is kids feel so alone, and they're really not. And they're not fighting this fight that has never been fought before, you know? So thank you for letting me repeat that several times, because it's really big to me.
Oh, no, it's really important here. So we're talking with, so your pen name is Gene Turner, and your book is going to be called Transgender Trailblazers. We're talking with Gene Turner, who's writing a book right now called Transgender Trailblazers, and you're listening to KBOO Community Radio here in Portland, Oregon. We're just doing a little bit of transgender history. It's Pride Month, and what a better way to celebrate Pride than talking to an author about transgender, his, her story, their story, our story. Yeah, let's hear some more. We have time for maybe one more or two more stories. Is there anybody else that you'd like to kind of tell us about? We've learned about the Bond girl and about the jazz musician and about the British woman who was decorated by the royalty. Was there anybody else that's really interested you in your book so far, your research?
Yeah, I'd say one other performer. Do you know what vaudeville is?
Vaudeville, yeah. That was like the beginning of Hollywood.
Yes, right. He was a vaudeville entertainer and a female impersonator. And he probably his career spanned over 50 years. He was another one that spanned from like the 1910s to the late 1960s when he passed away, and he never really did have a person out him, or her, she never had anybody out her. She performed, music. She was a musician, and actually she wasn't a musician in the days that we know her as now. I call her a musician. She made like 15, 16 albums, but they were called spoken word albums. And she did comedy shows on stage, and they were recorded onto albums. And so her music, if you will, her thing was she did spoken word albums. And if you think of vaudeville, you think of silent movies, black and white, you know, all of that stuff. And so, yeah, she did all these spoken word albums. And I don't know, have you ever seen a what's called a 78 album? Do you recognize like a 33 RPM or 45?
I know there were like I know there were like little ones and there were bigger.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, well, there was a 78 that played really fast, and it was all him talking. And it was like things like "Don't Call Me Madam," let's see, "A Trick Ain't Always a Treat," you know, some fun, "A Girl of the Golden West." I mean, all kinds of different spoken albums.
And it was a lot of fun. It sounds like she had a lot of puns in her.
She had a lot of puns.
Yeah.
She had a lot of puns, unspoken puns too, but apparently she was a kidder. They say that no matter what she said, you didn't know whether to believe her or not, because you never knew if she was joking or not. And she had major stars that were friends of hers. Hopalong Cassidy was a famous name back in the day. And we're talking, her time was like 1910, I think. So she was born in 1902. I picked it back. She was born in 1902. So this one's even older than the last one I talked to. One of the last ones. And she lived to 1971, and she lived her life. And I can't remember with this one if she got surgery or not. All I know is she dressed as a beautiful, beautiful woman. And what I notice about female impersonators or drag queens or whatever, and that doesn't knock anybody from today, but what I noticed from back in time, they were very, very classy. They dressed very high class. They had like impeccable manners and mannerisms, and it just, wow, don't knock your socks off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And,
just fascinating. And to just to hear, you know, these stories again, just to hear these kind of stories. There was a, in the past, there was a term called the pansy craze. And during this pansy craze is kind of what I was talking to you about earlier. This was a name, the pansy craze. And in my time, pansy was a bad word. But in this time, which was like the mid-1930s.
Are they talking about pansies like as in flowers?
No, they're talking about men who dressed up as women. They had a nickname called pansy.
Oh, pansy. Okay.
Yeah. Now, the term pansy was used like... To cut down effeminate males, but it was adopted by the gay community back then because they kind of took it on like drag
kind
queens.
Kind of like we've done with queer?
Yeah, kind of like queer, yeah.
Oh.
They took on pansy and turned it around and made it fun and, you know, hey, you want to call us a name? We're going to turn around and use it and have fun with it. You know?
Yeah.
And it was great. It was great. It was a big craze. And this was like in the 1930s and yeah, it was great. And this is what they all, this was all the female impersonators, drag queens, they all fell into this, you know, older time and this pansy craze. Yeah. And you can, you know, anybody wants to do research, they'll know what I'm talking about and who I'm talking about, but you know,
yeah.
I don't want to really reveal that until the book comes out. So, but yeah, so, you know, I think just the interesting part about this last one I'm talking about was he actually got in a self-defense, he claimed, against his landlord. And his landlord said he was going to evict him from his apartment. Or house or, you know, a place where he was living for rent, and he ended up killing his landlord. So he ended up in jail and lived out his most of his days in jail, unfortunately, and then died. So there, you know, there's different stories for different people, and
yeah,
fascinating and not so good, some good, but you know,
She certainly wasn't the first transgender person to end up in prison.
No. And unfortunately, you know, whether she did it or not, who knows? But, you know.
Yeah.
How we tend to throw people in prison who don't meet up to our social standards.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, if you kill somebody, I don't know. A different standard, though.
Yeah, if she did it. What I'm saying is,
yeah.
Did she do it or did she get blamed for it?
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know, yeah.
That was the story, but what was the real story?
Well,
because she always maintained her innocence.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Wow, yeah, I could see how somebody back then...
Yeah.
If you're transgender, then obviously you're a criminal.
Obviously,
that's what people are thinking. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, they're doing that today. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the funny part, not the funny part, take that back. That's a bad word of choice. The part about today that I think is a little comical, if you will, is that when gay and lesbian was first coming out, in the 70s and 80s, you know, people were pointing their fingers at us and calling us all these names. Well, it was always, you're a pedophile. You're a pedophile. You're a pedophile. There ain't a pedophile, you know, anywhere near us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're few and far between found. You know what I mean? But they'll blame us. They'll blame us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very common, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, for queer people to be.
They're doing it amongst transgender now.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's an old story, people. Pick something else to point fingers at us about. So, yeah.
It's so great to be reminded of that. You know, we have so little history of our own people, of our own stories, and it seems like right now there's a move by people like Ron DeSantis to make it impossible for us to hear our own histories. I mean, it sounds like your book will be a book that is not allowed to be taught in public schools in Florida.
Sure, of course. No way, Jose. But do you know what? The day that Ron loses and the day that he is ousted out of office, my book will make it one day. Might be after my time, but it'll make it. And that'll be, I'll be happy in my grave.
Right. Oh, that's so great. Yeah, it sounds like you're also a transgender trailblazer. We've been talking with Gene Turner. Gene's writing a new book about transgender trailblazers, people who, you know, were out and transgender, you know, over a century ago, some of them. And it's just been so interesting. When do you anticipate, Gene, you're going to... I just can't wait to read your book. When do you anticipate you'll be ready for publication?
I'm hoping August, sometime before the end of August. So I got about 2 more months. I am in the process of taking orders for advanced reader copies. I want to get it out there as soon as I'm done and have people read it and leave me reviews and tell me how I'm doing and how they like the book, if I need to, you know, tweak it or anything like that. I'm very excited. I'm so close. So I wanted to get it out for Pride Month, but I missed it. So in August, I'm hoping.
Oh, every month is Pride Month. Yeah. No.
Oh, absolutely. In my world, it is.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's so exciting. It is. So, Gene, if there's a way that people want to follow you, is there any way to, follow the progress of your book online? Do you have like a page up on Facebook or a website or anything?
I have an email that I wanted to hand out. But I just for collecting, you know, the people that want to have an advanced copy.
Okay.
It's a little confusing because the one that I really wanted, Gene Turner, was taken. And so, the one I'm trying to get it for you here so I can give it to you online. I mean, on the, as we're talking is, Gene. So it's GENE _ and then it's turn, not Turner, just turn, TURN, at pm.me, pm.me.
Oh, great. Gene _ turn at pm.me.
Yep, that's it.
Oh, great. And that's if you're interested in an advanced reader copy.
Yes, ma'am.
Great. Well, that's so exciting. It's just, well, Gene, it's just been such a pleasure talking with you. I'm really just so thrilled to hear about your book. It sounds like it's going to be a really big success.
You know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, my toes crossed. And, you know, again, it's the message that's so important to me. And, you know, read it for the message.
I can't wait. I'm going to be one of those people writing to you for an advanced copy.
Great.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for having me. And it was great meeting you and talking to you. And it's been so much fun. Thank you so much.
Oh, great. This has been a real pleasure. Well, we've been talking today with Gene Turner. That's your pen name. And Gene has written a book about transgender histories called Transgender Trailblazers, set to be perhaps published this August. And just talking about some of these fascinating people from our own just very recent history who have really, you know, paved the way for the amazing, you know, advancement in rights and opportunities that we have today. We couldn't have done it without, you know, these people who came before us. So, Gene, thank you so much for joining us on Transpositive.
Thank you so much.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Go to the fight, go to the fire up and down. Lose all the-
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Trans Positive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
This month, besides being the season of Thanksgiving, here at KBOO we celebrate Native American heritage. Tune in throughout the rest of the month for special programming hosted and produced by Native American creators, as well as programming highlighting Native American, First Nation, Indigenous, and Aboriginal cultures here on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
I'm Doug McVeigh, host of Free Culture Radio. Every month, we bring you 30 minutes of news and information about people who use drugs, as we discuss topics